you know, such great feedback. And it's a beautiful, beautiful platform for Indigenous artists to be able to be recognized, you know, to be showcased, to have, you know, like an artist spotlight. Like, these are very difficult things for artists to navigate and to try to do that on their own.
Hey, welcome to the Red River Métis Marketplace podcast, where we celebrate artisans, makers, and storytellers behind the incredible products featured in our store. Hosted by Tammy Barton, each episode she dives into the journeys of Red River Métis creators, exploring their inspirations, challenges, and the cultural traditions woven into their craft. In this episode, Tammy is kicking it off with a powerhouse of creativity, artisan Candice Lipischek of Fat Dog. Her work has been showcased in renowned galleries like the Winnipeg Art Gallery, The Forks, and Warehouse Artworks. She is an inspiration to Red River Métis citizens and anyone who has experienced her art. Candice is not just an artist. She's an entrepreneur, passionate educator, and a co-founder of Fat Dog, a business rooted in tradition and family collaboration.
Hey, Candice, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to sit and chat with you. We're going to talk about the exhibitions that you've had featured in numerous galleries. So including the WAG, the Winnipeg Art Gallery, the Forks. You're going to say this so much better than I am because you're French. La Maison des Artistes Visuels Francophones.
That was really good. That's really good.
And Warehouse Artworks. You're a true inspiration for Red River Métis citizens and many people who have experienced your work. I know that you're the co-owner. You are the co-owner, right? Of Fat Dog, which we will dive into shortly. But first, a little diversion. Let's talk about garlic. I heard you grow and sell a lot of garlic. Tell me about that.
A lot of garlic. Yes, I do. We do. My partner and I actually started a few years ago, probably about 5 years ago, with, you know, a handful. And then it got to be like 100 and people were interested, friends and family, to have some organic garlic because we don't use pesticides or herbicides. Last year, we planted over 20,000 for the year last year. Yeah. This year, so last fall, we kind of slowed down a bit. It was a lot of work. It's just my partner Charles and I, you know, my mom and dad, some cousins, friends and family that have been helping us. Otherwise, you know, we'd have had to hire outside and we're just not that kind of type of company. So we still got 8,500 in the ground and yeah, we grow Red Russian garlic and use it a lot. we're garlic people. So yeah.
Yeah. And I know because I've tasted it and it is incredible. I remember actually coming and buying it out of your parents' garage.
Yes.
As they were shucking everything. That's awesome. So that's just a piece of it, but you started as a graphic designer, right? And then you branched out into jewelry design and then other creative endeavors. Was that 2015?
Yeah, so everything got started in 2015. And even before that, I used to work for the Department of French Education. And then I took a leave of absence for a while due to medical reasons. I had really severe PTSD. I also was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So my life just needed to change in terms of taking care of myself. So I was already doing some graphic design for the Department of French Ed. And I started CanArt Productions, Production Canal, so which is a graphic design business. So that was essentially my first foray into entrepreneurship. And then, yeah, it wasn't that, it was good. It wasn't that good. I actually worked at a daycare in town in St. Pierre here to supplement my income. And I slowly started, you know, learning how to carve antler from my dad. And it's actually a sole proprietorship now. So I'm the sole owner of Fat Dog. But it does stand for father daughter. So, you know, the way it's spelled, FATDAUG. And yeah, it'll be almost 10 years. So I'm just so grateful for that and for everything else that's come up in terms of art. So
that's incredible. And with when you started in graphic design, how important is it to you to create art driven by your vision and passion, both for artistic fulfillment and personal wellness? It's all connected, isn't it?
Absolutely. Everything has connected in one way or another. I mean, just learning graphic design and applying it to my own business, being able to do my own business cards, you know, creating my own blank art cards, and, you know, any kind of learning that I've had hands-on has always trickled into what I need it for now as a business owner. But yeah, artist healing is 110% the reason why I kept going. It was just so important in terms of, you know, slowing down a little bit and doing something that you love. And it just turned into a snowball of opportunities that I'm so grateful for. Like, I can't even tell you, from the solo and group exhibitions to, you know, selling, you know, at different markets and for the Red River Métis Marketplace and selling at the Winnipeg Art Gallery. And then, yeah, doing art residencies with kids and schools, like the educational part, the workshop, the cultural aspect of being Métis and being able to teach others about it. It's been a whole bunch of fun. Can't put it any other way.
Yeah, liberating, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So I've been to your shop. I know how creative it is. And I know that you live right beside the Rat River and you've discovered discarded items there. Basically, you've mentioned before, people think it's junk, but that you thought it was cool stuff like saw blades and jars and glassware, tins, cans, chains. I think of all the other stuff that I've seen in your studio there. And then you started putting pieces together, which would kind of collectively come up with a final piece. So you've taken, you know, an old rusted barrel and turned it into a bison, which I find incredible that you have that vision. So when you saw junk, and how were you spoken to at that moment when you saw this stuff?
Yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate that so much. I just, you know, I just started getting out more and I started cleaning up by the side of the Rat River, like I said, and we've got about 50 feet frontage that slowly hills down. So it was incredible, all the stuff I was finding. And I've always loved antiques. I've always loved old stuff, you know. There was just so much of it. So I started dragging some stuff out and I'm not sure what it was. I've always worked with my hands, and for some reason I started putting these things together. And I even questioned myself. I questioned myself a lot. You know, why am I even doing this? Like, what's your point? I would tell my partner, like, hey, I'm going to make a bison out of this, because this hump of this, you know, old rusted, his eyes would glaze over. He would just like, show me when you're done, you know? but when it was done, it was kind of like, okay, now I see what you mean, you know? And just having a show at, my first show was in Wissogaming in Clear Lake with Patrick Tracy. And that was nerve wracking and crazy. And I didn't sell anything. My prices were like just not good. I didn't know what I was doing, but I started learning. And then now I'm getting ready for an exhibition at the Urban Shaman Contemporary Aboriginal Art Gallery next year.
Nice. Yeah.
And that'll be my 15th exhibition in 10 years.
Incredible.
It takes a lot of hard work, but when passion is behind it, that comes secondary, you know? So it's just been like doing it for the love of it, doing it because it makes me happy, doing it because it keeps my hands busy, my mind busy. And I just love seeing things come together and trying to figure that part out. You know, I'm by no means an engineer, maybe a creative engineer in that sense of trying to put stuff together. But yeah, it's brought me so much joy and peace.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And then, so it's, you know, we mentioned 2015, but really it started with your dad. That's why you said that you did the fat dog. Your dad's name is Larry, right?
That's right. Yep.
So Larry to everybody else, your dad. And that kind of started, from what I remember too, just with him, actually, with antler carvings and things like that. So
yeah, he was a woodworker.
That must have been an amazing creation to have, you know, spend that time with your dad and then start that business flowing after that. With that kind of connection with your dad. Did it bring your dad and you closer? Like, were you guys brought closer at that point, or you were already closer with your dad and this was just another part to it?
Yeah, we were already pretty close. I mean, from ever since I was a kid, I was a tomboy and I would sit at his workbench in the garage. Like, we would have a picture of us together. I'm just in diapers. And he's always taken the time to explain to his daughter how things worked. So he didn't have a son. So, you know, I learned the oil changes, how the ball joints were changed, how disc brakes work on a car, you know, how things work. I'm a visual, and he would, you know, teach me that. So because he's done that from a young age, he's always been a mentor in every sense of the word. So him being a wood carver since I was a kid, and I used to watch him do that, when he made a pair of moose antler earrings for me from the moose he had harvested over like 40 years ago when we had first started, I wanted to know how he did it. And he worked with a Dremel, and then he worked with a scroll saw, and then he worked with a bandsaw. So it was like, okay, show me how this is done. And after getting over the overall stench of actually working with antler, because it doesn't smell like wood. It's not pretty.
The antler, not your dad, right?
Not my dad. That quickly became a passion as well. And just something that I felt as a business owner that, hey, maybe, you know, this is our way of showing how we use every part of the animal as possible, being Métis and this art. And, you know, I hadn't seen a lot of it out there. Except for this wonderful carver from Saint-Lupicin, his name was Ken Chambers. And when I first started at Winnipeg Folk Festival, people were like, oh, I've bought some of your work. And I'm like, no, I've only been doing this for 2 years. So it was good to know, to hear that there were carvers, you know, that typically Inuit or First Nations, you know, it was Métis. So yeah, it's brought us even closer together. We work very closely. Our ideas, we just bounce off each other. And we're starting a new line of little antler trees. I haven't been released yet.
Candace just showed me a picture of it, so you'll have to you won't see that on the podcast, but no. I can see it. It is very cool.
Thanks. We did get accepted to craft it again this year through the Winnipeg Art Gallery.
Yeah, you go there or you come down to the Red River Métis Marketplace and you'll see it.
You'll see those there, yeah.
There's a marketplace where every item has a story. The Red River Métis Marketplace is home to hundreds of Red River Métis artisans, each crafting one-of-a-kind pieces that celebrate our culture, heritage, and traditions. From intricate beadwork to hand-sewn textiles, wood carvings to contemporary art, every purchase supports Red River Métis artisans and keeps our artistry thriving. Visit us at 150 Henry Avenue in Winnipeg or browse online at redrivermetismarketplace.ca to bring home Métis craftsmanship. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Red River Métis Marketplace. Also, be on the lookout for our mobile marketplace coming to a community near you. Hey, are you a Red River Métis artist? Contact us today to start selling your work. Shop the Red River Métis Marketplace. Support artisans. Celebrate tradition. The Red River Métis Marketplace is a retail division of ESGS Inc., a proud affiliate company of the Manitoba Métis Federation, the national government of the Red River Métis.
You talked about Métis a lot. I mean, you're obviously a proud Métis citizen, but you've traveled across Canada, right? You've taught children and adults about the culture, and
I have.
What kind of workshops did you do?
So actually, the first time I started teaching workshops was through a friend of mine that introduced me to that, and we went to Fort Resolution. We went through Hay River. We actually stayed there for a week, and we taught jigging lessons. We went with Métis fiddler Michael Odette, so he was in charge of teaching some fiddle camps. We even went up to Litzoke, which is a very remote fly-in community, if you will, and they don't get visitors, you know, at all. So it was just so nice to share each other's cultures. Been to Grand Prairie, Alberta, you know, I just all over Manitoba in different communities, different schools. Like I said, I just finished a residency with Greenway School, part of the University of BC Wingspan program. So there's always something out there to teach. I've taught finger sash weaving. I've taught pointillism painting. I've taught diamond willow whittling. A lot of just different cultural activities.
And how important is that to you, that you're carrying on the Red River Métis culture and tradition?
Oh, extremely, extremely important for us growing up. So I'm almost 50 and it was just the Festival du Voyageur. You know, that's it. You're Métis and there's a Festival du Voyageur and, you know, we wear sashes and a toque and we jig. And, you know, growing up, it was not well received by my grandmother, who's Métis, but all her siblings did, which was kind of, you know, bizarre for me. So it was super important for me to learn about the culture, about our Michif language. You know, we don't just speak French, we speak Michif, and we just took that for granted, you know, that that's just the way we talk, you know, but it's a real language. And it's, you know, that's something else that needs revitalization and something else that needs to be preserved. So a lot of things, I think there's just a resurgence of our culture in every sense of the word, in learning our practices, how to tan, you know, our medicines, how to harvest, how to, you know, preserve, canning, art. There's just so much to learn, to be learned and to share.
Which is wonderful, because it's not only youth, you're preserving the traditions for the elders. You know, you're able to do that through everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm going to go back to the actual antlers and parts that you use, because you mentioned your dad with, you know, the hunting side and then using everything. How important is it to you to use, like, as much as the animal as you can to be able to make these creations, to embrace that Métis side of traditions?
I think it's extremely important. I mean, we've had that since we were kids. You know, my father made his own hunting knee-high moccasins that he would wear hunting. And we used to wear them, you know, at school during, you know, holiday celebrations, festivals, voyage. And he's like, I don't know about that. Like, there's kind of some blood stains on here, right? But it's like, people won't know. They won't care.
Yeah.
So we would wear his size 10, ridiculously big moccasins with our little runners inside and, like, you know, flop around school with these because we just thought it was cool because these were my dad's hunting, you know, his hunting stuff. But I think it's extremely important, you know, just the hide, the antlers, they're not just hanging at a cottage. I mean, they do get reused in nature by animals that do, you know, chew on them and use them for burrowing and for homes. It's just a way of also, you know, having that animal spirit live on, making people feel good, making people feel grounded, you know. I have a certain pendant that I wear and I worry it. I rub it a lot. It brings me comfort, makes me feel stronger when I need strength. And I think a lot of people feel that as well in our pieces. Like, I've had people cry when they've walked away after their purchase. And we've gifted a lot as well. And in people that, you know, I haven't had the money, and it's not about the money. It's about connection. It's about, you know, having two little boys come to your table and knowing about truth and reconciliation and learning about antlers in their school. So you give them a piece, you know, like a keychain, so that they can wear that and feel proud about their knowledge and show the kids at school, like, wow, I was gifted this. Like, this is what an antler looks like, how hard it is, how strong it is, what colors they are. I just think they're gifts in themselves.
Well, and I like that part of it, is that you don't just stick to one thing using the antlers. Like, you've got a lot of different things that you utilize that antler with, and the other pieces that you were talking about. So, and I just stare at it sometimes, like, it's absolutely incredible. I don't know where you get it from. I'm like, wow. So, you know, and we talked about the side that you're connecting to youth and elders and tradition. Can we talk a little bit about the PTSD and the MS side? Obviously, it's a challenge physically for some things as well, to be able to do that or sit in one spot or whatever it might be. with the PTSD and the MS, I mean, there's so many stigmatisms around mental health and physical. Do you use your platform in that way? And I know you and I have talked about it before, but to educate and inspire others with your story?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, not that I was able to before because I was still healing. I was still in a bad place. Now I'm in a better place to be able to share that. And, you know, regardless of what trauma people have gone through, it's people deal with it differently. And for me, it was art as healing. I wasn't ready for it right away. You know, I went through probably about 15 years of counseling because I walked into an armed robbery in progress and I had a gun to my head. And it was really tough. It was really tough. All the other clients, we were about 15, 20, were behind the counter and they were on the floor. And, you know, they had machetes and like I said, guns and masks. And so a lot of things were triggering after that. Many, many, many things were triggering. Just walking through a door was triggering for me because when I walked through that door, I felt threatened and I didn't know whether I should leave or stay and get shot, you know? And I think a few years later with the diagnosis, I just, my body couldn't handle it, couldn't handle the trauma. And that's, you know, maybe what happened. And I wouldn't be here today if it wouldn't have been for those things. I know it sounds crazy, but you get pushed. You get pushed to do things that life, what am I doing here? You know?
Well, and then you found your out, right? You found your ability to create and pour things into your creations and the amazing things that you do and the inspiring things that you do for others. So in itself, like when you think about these hurdles that you've had to get over, huge hurdles, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could have skipped and fallen flat on your face like most hurdles. I remember I've done that before. But this is an ability for other people to be able to say, hey, you know, she did that and it's still part of her life, but she gained strength from it to be able to make these creations and find it therapeutic and part of your journey to heal, because it'll be a ever healing process. I mean, I'm sure, which is the inspiration I think that people can get from that. You know, no matter what happens in life, I can do this. So there was a picture or something that Justice Murray Sinclair wearing a moose antler dream catcher with feather pen on TSN in the Jets game. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Right. Oh, it's super fun. Yeah. I was at a market and it was like, I actually met him at the Toronto airport when I was going for work. And I gave him my business card, my fat dog business card. And I introduced myself and I just find him so inspiring. And I was at a market, I believe it was Manitowabe, and he came to my booth and said, I'm looking for something. And it didn't take him long, just a few minutes. And he spotted the dream catcher and said, yep, that's the one. And I was just, it was just such an honor for him to have liked that piece, to have seen that piece and go, yeah, you know, I'd like to purchase that one. So seeing him on TV wearing it, because he normally has a bison pendant that he wears a lot for his, you know, whatever press conferences and ceremonies and such. So yeah, to see that was kind of like, hey, that's the fat dog.
That's really cool. Well, and it's like, yeah, I mean, it's always cool to see that when people, you know, appreciate your talent and want to wear it proudly.
Thank you.
So, yeah, no, it's very cool. With the Red River Métis Marketplace, I'm going to kind of draw it back to us a little bit selfishly at the end. how has that really helped you and Fat Dog and all the things that you're doing?
Exponentially, I would have to say I've had so much support and, you know, such great feedback. And it's a beautiful, beautiful platform for Indigenous artists to be able to be recognized, to be promoted properly, efficiently, you know, to be showcased, to have, you know, like an artist spotlight. Like, these are very difficult things for artists to navigate and to try to do that on their own. So just to have this bigger voice where we are all there collectively as artists and artisans to, you know, support each other, encourage each other, buy from each other, trade with each other. You know, it's just, it's just wonderful. It's just a wonderful opportunity and space to have your work there. So I'm just proud and honored to have that kind of visibility.
Well, and we're proud to have you there. It's fun showcasing your talents.
Thanks so much.
I know that you're thinking of books. I just want to talk about books a little bit with what you're working on currently, because this has been a long haul for you with your illustration, things like that. Talk about that just a little before we go.
Oh, it's one of the most nerve-wracking things I think I've been thinking about. So I illustrated Indigenous legends, which were filmed through Wookiee Films Productions, which is a Métis production team, brother-sister twin duo, which I love very much, who I love very much, Jenin and Jeremy Wookiee. So yeah, they produced this animated Indigenous children's series for CBC. And because I did all the illustrations on butcher paper, they said, you know, it might be a great idea for you to use these illustrations for something else to put them out there. So I thought of getting a book together, maybe a 2 or 3 volume book with these Indigenous legends, once again, to bring back our culture and other people's culture as well, First Nations and Inuit cultures, Indigenous culture, and to get it translated in Mi'kmaq.
Beautiful.
Because like, how cool would that be? You know, I've never had books when I was a kid that were in Mi'kmaq, let alone knowing that was our language. So being a workshop facilitator and someone that just, you know, is involved in education and culture, I would love to just, you know, go touring with a book.
Yeah.
You know, go touring in Lhtso'kay where they don't have access to this. And that's really my goal, is to be able to have children have access to a book that's tangible and not just necessarily on TV. You know, kids that are in hospitals, kids that are in remote locations that don't have access to that. You know, let's go back to old school and get a book that you can actually go to bed with and flip through and enjoy these illustrations that are, you know, whimsical and fun. So I'm hoping to get it published. I've sent it to Scholastic. Who knows? You know, fingers crossed. But there's another venue that just opened up for me, maybe a new possibility that I can't talk about yet. Maybe we'll have to do a second podcast for that.
Sure.
Like, for now. Yeah, fingers crossed, asking the spirits to help me out, and we'll see what happens.
Well, and I think, you know, that it's evolution, right? You're just going to keep doing stuff. Like, it's never really going to stop. There's going to be more doors open with your positive outlook on things, and more and more doors will just keep opening. It's going to be wonderful.
Thanks. I hope so.
So we're going to kind of wrap things up. I think there's so much more to say, but I think that we'd have to make it into a show, an hour and a half, and with episode.
We don't want people to fall asleep either. So it's like, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I mean, you can definitely find Candace by looking her up, but come to the Red River Métis Marketplace and you'll find lots of things there that showcase Candace. So thanks so much, Candace, for hanging out with us today.
Thank you, Tammy, for your support, ongoing support, and to the Red River Métis Marketplace for all you've done so far.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode of the Red River Métis Marketplace podcast. We love celebrating the incredible artisans, makers, and entrepreneurs who bring their talent, culture, and passion into everything they create. Their work isn't just about the products, it's about storytelling, tradition, and resilience. Hey, if you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow the Red River Métis Marketplace podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to support our artisans directly, visit us in store at 150 Henry Avenue in Winnipeg, Manitoba, or online at redrivermetismarketplace.ca.